of the government. And if Congress won't stand up for itself, then we have a fundamentally different government than we thought we did.
Last question, David Day and Adelita Grijalva. The Congress member elect who represents more than 800,000 people in the greater Tucson area has not been seated yet, to the shock of many, even Republicans, not to mention Democrats. If the House reconvenes, though he could have done it anyway, will Johnson have to seat her?
Speaker Johnson has said he will seat Adelita Grijalva. It doesn't change the math as far as passing this bill to reopen the government. So what that means is that there will then be 218 votes on a discharge petition to release the Epstein files. There is every indication that Grijalva will sign that and become the 218th vote. That means it gets an automatic vote on the House floor. And I would expect that to happen rather quickly after she is sworn in.
And that comes as the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee, Jamie Raskin, says in speaking to a whistleblower, Ghislaine Maxwell, the Epstein co-conspirator jailed for 20 years, is seeking a commutation from Trump, and in the meantime is getting concierge treatment at a minimum security prison that she's been moved to after meeting with Trump's former personal attorney. David Dayan, I want to thank you for being with us, executive editor of the American Prospect. Coming up, we go to Chicago, where Juan is, but also where protesters are, who've denounced federal immigration agents for dragging a daycare teacher out of a Spanish immersion school in front of the pre-K students and parents. We'll speak to a mother of one of the kids. Stay with us.
Bendición que me trajo al mundo. Quiero decirte hoy, quiero recordarte que eres lo más hermoso que me ha pasado en la vida.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Mimi Goodman in New York. Juan Gonzalez is in Chicago, where protests are continuing over the Trump administration's massive immigration raids. Over the weekend, federal immigration agents reportedly pepper sprayed a father and his one-year-old daughter at close range in the parking lot of a grocery store in the Chicago suburb of Cicero. On Friday, police arrested 14 mothers who were protesting outside the Broadview Immigration Jail.
There aren't enough people speaking up. There are people protesting here at this Broadview ICE facility every Friday, but not enough. We are in our communities being terrorized by ICE and Border Patrol. They are tear gassing neighborhoods for fun. We saw that in court this week, a video of them saying, have fun, as they threw tear gas canisters in a residential neighborhood. They ran in this week to a daycare center and pulled a teacher out in front of toddlers who were screaming and crying. In my school, at the elementary school, we have to walk children to and from school because their immigrant parents are afraid to leave the house. Our entire community in Chicago and across the suburbs are being terrorized by ICE and Border Patrol. We are moms. We are mad. We are coming together to say that families should not be torn apart. Immigrants should not be targeted.
The Broadview protests came days after a shocking video went viral showing armed ICE agents in black vests dragging a teacher out of a Spanish immersion daycare and preschool in front of the children and parents. Diana Santillana Galeano is a beloved teacher at the Rayito del Sol Spanish Immersion Early Learning Center. Community members, including Democratic Congressmember Delia Ramirez, have denounced her arrest.
They didn't just walk in chasing one person. They went into multiple rooms asking and looking for teachers while children were present. This is an agency that has gone rogue. And it's an agency that believes that as long as they can cover their face, they can get away with anything. It is why this immediate press conference was so important and why all of us are here with the parents, with teachers, with someone who I just talked to an hour ago, and she said, Delia, I don't think I can go back to work tomorrow. I don't know that I'm safe.
We go now to Chicago, where we're joined by Tara Gadarzi, a parent of a three-year-old who attends Rayito del Sol, where Diana Santillana Galeano was detained by ICE on November 5th. In front of parents and the young kids. Tara, thanks so much for being with us. You came right after this happened. Can you describe what everyone described? Of course, we see this woman being taken out, the teacher at the daycare center. Explain what the kids and the parents saw.
Hi, good morning, Amy. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I was on my way to drop off my son to school when I started getting a bunch of calls and texts about the situation at the school. My son was super excited to start his normal day at his favorite place and see all his friends. And when we arrived, it was just a shocking scene. There were crowds of parents and teachers huddled together and crying. Kids were crying. Some were in corners, like being shielded by their teachers, almost as if they were hiding. It was a devastating scene, and my son quickly became emotionally affected by it as well.
And Tara, the Department of Homeland Security spokesperson claimed on X that individuals were attempting to barricade themselves inside the daycare center. What do you know actually happened when these agents arrived?
My understanding is that the teacher was just trying to get to work to start her normal day. She is a beloved member of our community. We want her to be there teaching our children. And she was followed into the school. Our school has security measures in place, such as signs outside that say that it's a private establishment for authorized personnel only. We have locked inner doors that prevent people from just walking in. And so Diana was allowed in to start her normal day. She is absolutely a teacher there. My understanding is she was just trying to get to work that day.
And how have you and the other parents begun to process what happened to the children of the daycare center?
Yeah, we have really banded together as a community as part of the larger efforts of resistance that have been happening in Chicago for months now. So mirroring those efforts, we have started our own parent patrols outside of the school with whistles. You know, our whistles are kind of the only thing we have right now in Chicago to protect ourselves and our communities from these agents. We've started meal trains. We've started rideshare programs for the teachers who are maybe too scared to drive themselves to work every day or even to go to their assigned court dates for some immigration hearings. So we have safe passage escort programs for them. We've also started legal defense funds, and we're working on like master lists of readily available immigration counsel that can be of help to any educators that are in need. So it's really brought an awareness and a heightened sense of community to our neighborhood and our city in an effort to heal from the trauma that we faced last week and that we have been facing for months now since the onset of Operation Midway Blitz.
GoFundMe has just exploded, supporting the mom, the teacher. Also, can you talk about the mutual aid networks that are providing ride shares and groceries for neighbors who are too afraid to leave their homes now?
Yeah. So, you know, everybody has a different risk tolerance in Chicago. So there's a different way to contribute and chip in for everybody. If you want to be a little bit more low profile, there are mutual aid networks everywhere. In every neighborhood, a lot of organizations are starting their own. A lot of schools are starting their own. There are food pantries that are constantly up and running looking for volunteers to take shifts. People pack groceries, people sign up for delivery shifts all over the city. And there's just been an explosion, like you said, of opportunities to contribute to our immigrant communities. They are deeply, deeply important to us in Chicago. And right now, we really just want to do everything we can to support them.
And do you think, Tara, that the institutions, the local institutions in this city, the police, the mayor, and other elected officials are doing enough to assure the safety and the tranquility of not only of your daycare center, but of immigrants and folks throughout the city right now?
Yeah, I'm fully supportive of Mayor Johnson's executive order that he signed a little while ago, which prohibited ICE from utilizing public spaces for any operations. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like that's being adhered to. So I think we really do need to reevaluate what else can be done to protect us from these federal agents. Unfortunately, I have been at Broadview myself. I have seen Illinois State Police acting in a violent way towards peaceful protesters. And over the weekend, I saw Chicago police officers doing similar activities. So we are starting to get increasingly concerned about some of the state police activity that's been happening. And I do think this is an issue that needs to be addressed with both the governor and the mayor.
And if you could finally, Tara, talk about how your little boy, 3 years old, who came right after, but all the other kids terrorized and the parents, how are these kids dealing with what they saw, their teacher being dragged out? And I mean, she herself, this Spanish immersion teacher of preschoolers, has two kids herself.
Yeah, she is a mother, and she's actually an infant teacher. So we entrust Diana with our youngest kids at this school, babies. You know, that's how much we love and support her. People send their new babies as young as 4 months, I believe, to be in her care every day. You know, the kids have been so confused. The kids have been saying things like, "Are they going to take me next? If I speak Spanish outside, am I going to get taken from my mom? Where is my teacher? I miss Miss Diana. You know, I'm afraid." These are things that our children have said to us. My son was completely, like, he shut down emotionally after this happened. You know, kids process things differently, and he was just, like, so shocked by the state that his school and his safe place had transformed into. And we really need to start working on how to talk to our kids about these issues. I'm personally working on some Know Your Rights materials that can be, like, transferred to little kids so we can start having these conversations with them, as well as showing them, like, age-appropriate books about how to, you know, interact with our neighbors and our community and learn about what it means to be undocumented in Chicago, just so they can all start learning, unfortunately, from an early age, what this has done to our city.
I want to thank you for being with us, Tara Godarzi, parent of a 3-year-old who attends Rayito del Sol Daycare Center, where one of the young teachers, Diana Santillana, was violently detained by ICE, dragged out of the school on November 5th in front of parents and young children. Coming up, Free Joanne Little. A new documentary looks back at the 1975 murder trial of the first woman in U.S. history to be acquitted of using deadly force to resist sexual assault. Stay with us. Back in 20 seconds.
Her only child, her baby boy. She was his second daughter, her father's pride and joy. Somebody's mother, brother, best friend, sister, lover. Maybe an A1 student running, hiding, taking cover. The women get
gather crying tears that fill a million oceans. It doesn't matter where you're living. The women gather crying tears that fill a million oceans.
People say, not in this neighborhood. It doesn't happen here. Our kids have everything. What do we have to fear?
Women Gather by Sweet Honey and the Rock, performing with Bernice Johnson Regan in Our Democracy Now! Firehouse Studio back in 2003. Bernice Johnson Regan is featured in our next segment. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Before we begin with our last segment, we want to note it includes a discussion of sexual assault. 50 years ago, August 15th, 1975, Joanne Little became the first woman in U.S. history to be acquitted of murder on the grounds of self-defense against sexual violence. Joanne Little was charged with first-degree murder after she stabbed a white guard named Clarence Alligood, who she said tried to rape her in the Beaufort County Jail in North Carolina. She faced the death penalty if convicted. Her landmark trial inspired a national campaign for racial justice, prisoners' rights, and a woman's right to self-defense against sexual assault. Those who defended her included Angela Davis, Rosa Parks, and its impact is felt today in the Me Too movement and calls to say her name. Now, a new documentary called Free Joanne Little will have its world premiere Wednesday and Thursday at Doc NYC Film Festival. In a minute, we'll speak with the director, Yoruba Richin. But first, some clips. This is Karen Bethea Shields, now Karen Galloway, who was on Joanne Little's legal team. She was the first African-American woman to graduate from Duke University's School of Law.
We got a call from the medical examiner who told us we need to see the autopsy report. The autopsy report showed how his body was stabbed a number of times. And then we realized the most important detail. Alligood was found dead naked from the waist down. And there was semen found dripping from his penis. Obviously, he died not in the line of duty. Because what kind of duty is that? That was when I understood that what we were dealing with in Joanne's case was rape.
Joanne Little's lawyer, Jerry Paul, pushed to make sure she would not be held in the jail where the attack took place. Again, this is Karen Bethea Shields, key member of Little's legal team.
Joanne was afraid, and she had a right to be. At that time in North Carolina, the sentence she could be facing for first-degree murder was the death penalty. One person was ready to get her out of the country, and she refused. She says, I want to stay here and tell my story. She wanted people to know what really happened to her. Now, if you're not telling the truth, you're not going to be saying that. So I believed her. And so did a lot of people.
As Joanne Little's case drew national attention, it was a focus of a song by Sweet Honey and the Rock. We hear from member Bernice Johnson Regan in this clip from Free Joanne Little. But first, Angela Davis.
Who is this girl? And what is she to you, Joanne?
Reagan of Sweet Honey and La Rock wrote a song.
Joanne's the woman who's born to carry a child.
We recorded this song about a woman named Joanne Little. I remember thinking that this could be my daughter, my sister, my mother, could be any woman on the planet.
Bernice would sing this line, Joanne is you, Joanne is me, and women would just sort of scream.
Joanne, the woman who's born to
That last voice was Christina Green, author of the book Free Joanne Little, The Politics of Race, Sexual Violence and Imprisonment. And finally, this is a clip from the film about Joanne Little's testimony in her case, featuring a dramatic reading from the trial transcript when she was questioned by her own lawyer, Jerry Paul. First, we hear from another of her lawyers, Karen Bethea Shields.
She was nervous, but we had prepared her for the type of questions she was going to get. We told her just to tell her story and answer the questions correctly and truthfully.
Miss Little, on the 26th of August, did you see Clarence Alleywood?
Yes, sir, I saw him.
Did he say anything to you?
He was talking about how nice I looked and that he wanted me to have sex with him.
What did you say to him?
I told him no, and I would really appreciate it if he left, and he left.
Do you know about what time that was?
It was about 2.
What happened later?
He came back again with a pack of cigarettes and a bag of sandwiches. He had a sort of, I'll say, silly grin on his face.
For more on this remarkable documentary, Free Joanne Little, which has its world premiere Wednesday and Thursday at Doc NYC, we're joined by its director, the acclaimed filmmaker Yoruba Rich, and founding director of the documentary program at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY, City University of New York. Yoruba, welcome back to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
What an amazing documentary short this is. What a lesson in history. Why'd you choose to do it now?
Yeah, thank you so much, Amy. So I discovered this story when I was making my film about Rosa Parks, The Rebellious Life of Mrs. Rosa Parks. And Rosa was one of her advocates. She created the Free Joanne Little Committee in Detroit. And one of the things we did in the film, the Rosa Parks film, was look at Rosa Parks' lifelong commitment to putting a light, shining a light and investigating sexual violence against black women starting, you know, in the 1940s with the most famously the case of Recy Taylor. And then we connected it to her work in the 70s around the Joanne Little case. And when I discovered this story, I was amazed. It was, you know, hidden in plain sight. It was recent, relatively recent, and there was so much footage. It was really well covered, like, throughout the world. So I knew I wanted to go back to this story. It was only a small part of my film, the Rosa Parks film, but I knew I wanted to go back to this story and bring it to light and show how these various movements as well, disparate movements who were, you know, sniping and not aligned on a lot of things, similar to what we see today, came together for the fight for justice. And, you know, in this unlikely circumstance, a black woman accused of killing a white prison guard, you know, they were able to have victory. And so I think it's such an important lesson for today.
And Yoruba, could you talk a little bit more about that? What prompted this national movement to develop on a case that would otherwise not have necessarily garnered much attention out of, except where it actually happened?
Yeah, I think the lawyers, Jerry Paul, Karen Bethea Shields, they recognize that in order for justice to happen for Joanne, they had to create a movement. They had to foster a movement. And so they reached out to Larry Little, who's also featured in the film. He was head of the Black Panthers in North Carolina. They reached out to him. He went around the country with Joanne, and they organized. It was organized. It was meeting people in where they were around the country. It was reaching out to, you know, the white feminist movement, to the black power movement, to LGBT, labor, that sort of on-the-ground work. And we show that. We have footage of him, you know, doing that work that got people motivated and invested in this case, and the case became, you know, a really rallying cry for all these communities and throughout the world. It was covered by Swedish television. It was featured in newspapers in Europe, in the Middle East, in Africa. So it became an international rallying cry for justice. And I think it inspired, you know, as the song says, Joanne is you, Joanne is me. Bernice Johnson Reagan says, you know, this could be my mother, my sister, my child. People related to what happened and to the sexual abuse of women that, you know, was so rampant and is so rampant, too, in prison and in our society.
And could you talk about the trial itself, the decision of the attorneys to put Joanne Little on the stand to testify in her own defense, and also what happened to her after her acquittal?
Yeah, so that decision was key. As you know, a lot of times defendants do not testify in their own trial, and especially victims of sexual violence, and especially at that time. You know, as we see in the film, there are headlines calling her, you know, a whore or a murderess. Women who were sexually assaulted or accusing people of sexually assault were completely victimized. I mean, completely criminalized and made, you know, and made to be that they were bringing it on to themselves or that she was seducing him. So to tell her own story, to choose to tell her own story on the trial, in court was a radical act. And it was, it moved the jury to tears. They saw her, you know, looked at the facts, felt her testimony, you know, listened to her testimony, and they acquitted her within a couple hours. And it was a mixed race jury. And then afterwards, Joanne did have to serve the remainder of her time that she was in for the initial charges. So she did serve her time, and then she went on to live a life of, you know, she hasn't spoken about the case for 30 years. She had some other run-ins with the law, but she is, my understanding, she's raising her family till this day. And she has not spoken about the case. And as Karen Bethia Shield says, she does not want to be re-traumatized by this, the worst moment of her life. But her legacy and the importance of the trial still resonates today.
What's amazing is she escaped after she killed him. And then they said that he was killed in the line of duty. She faced first-degree murder. But then there was a problem when they had to reveal that they found him naked from the waist down, only wearing socks. But when the lawyers, and Kunstler was involved with us too, right, William Kunstler, decided to bring her back in. They didn't bring her to that jail, scared that there was a death bounty on her head. And so they brought her to the State Bureau of Investigation.
I have to go back and look at
they didn't bring her to that jail.
Exactly.
Because
of course. They were scared she'd be killed. Mm. Absolutely.
Well, this is an amazing story. In the last 20 seconds, what lesson do you think it has for today?
Well, I think it's an inspiring lesson that when groups and marginalized communities and people who are fighting for justice come together, they can win in unlikely circumstances and in unlikely times, that victory can be achieved. And also that the scourge of violence and abuse in jails and in prisons is still something that we are reckoning with and that we are dealing with today.
Well, it's such an important film. Yoruba Richen is the acclaimed filmmaker and director of Free Joanne Little, which is having its world premiere this Wednesday and Thursday at the Doc NYC Film Festival here in New York. Happy birthday to Ale Tutic. I'll be speaking in Amsterdam at the International Film Festival there on Saturday. Check our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Thank you for supporting our annual fundraising campaign. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you for helping us rise higher and reach further.
Hi, my name is Taku. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons and campers. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Benedict.